life moves fast, and your home is at the center of it all. Don't let plumbing issues put a stop to your daily routine. There's never a good time to experience a plumbing disaster. So make Legacy Heating and Air your first call at the first sign of trouble. Our team of local plumbing professionals is here to help with problems large or small. A stopped drain doesn't have to stop everything. Trust the on-time guarantee, expert advice, quality workmanship, and honest service you've come to expect from the Legacy team. Call or schedule online at LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com.
Welcome to Football Never Sleeps, the weekly Notre Dame football show on YouTube, starring that guy in the next box, Tyler James, and me, Eric Hansen. It says my name right under there. We come to you every Monday night that we're not on vacation, and we're not on vacation this week, so we got plenty to talk to you about. We're working around all these lacrosse headlines and women's basketball recruiting and transfer headlines to bring you the latest with Notre Dame football. Before we get started, I want to remind you, we take your questions and we'll work them into our conversation as we go through the show. We also have like buttons and subscription things and other things to deal with. I'm not good at that. He is. So Tyler, take it away.
Yeah. First off, thanks for joining us. If you're here, if you are not subscribed to the Inside Indy Sports YouTube channel, make sure you do that. Hit the bell for reminders so that you know when we have content coming next. And hit the like button to support the show. We appreciate anyone submitting questions or comments through YouTube tonight. Make sure you click through to YouTube if you want to engage in that. If you're watching us embedded somewhere like InsideIndySports.com, the Insider Lounge, or on social media, we won't see your questions unless you click through onto YouTube because we can't check social media and the message board and stuff like that while we're live on the show. So if you want to talk, make sure you've done that. Click through. The comment section should be on the right-hand side. If you're on the desktop version, it should be below our talking heads. If you're on a mobile device of some sort, if you are not a subscriber to our website, we hope you consider taking advantage of our 30-day free trial that we have to InsideIndySports.com, which is exclusive to our YouTube audience here. Use promo code NDYT when you sign up to get free access to our premium analysis and recruiting coverage and special access to us on the Insider Lounge, which is where we spend a lot of our time, share our inside information first. Like if you're into women's basketball, Eric's been all over the Notre Dame's transfer portal and recruiting additions. Our subscribers on the Insider Lounge had a pretty good idea what was going on for Notre Dame and that we were waiting for some news. So we were able to follow up when that news broke and be ready to go. So if you want to be a subscriber to InsideIndySports.com, take a look at the link in the video description. Hit that link, use promo code NDYT, and you get a free 30-day trial.
Okay, well, we are taking stock of Notre Dame football after the transfer portal closes and heading into finals week. They're actually started finals week today at Notre Dame. The outgoing transfer front was quiet on the final day of portal entries for underclassmen last Tuesday and grad transfers last Wednesday. The Irish did add a player to next year's roster last week, Australian punter James Rendell, who we'll talk about in detail in just a little bit. That puts ND at 88 scholarships with the likelihood of adding one more, a cornerback. So our opening drive is the portal aftermath. The Irish don't have to be at the NCAA mandated 85 scholarship mark until the first day of fall semester classes, which this year is August 27th. That's 4 days ahead of the season opener at Texas A&M. Medical retirements and players who simply want to continue as students are two ways ND is likely to get to that number. Players who are already in the portal still can transfer. So that's what I was talking about. If Notre Dame wants to get a cornerback, he didn't have to transfer to Notre Dame by the close of the portal, but his name needed to be in there. So let's start with thoughts on there still being four quarterbacks and how that might play out moving forward, Tyler, since maybe that was the area that caused the biggest surprise among Notre Dame fans.
Yeah, I think two like ongoing things that I've said since the beginning of the offseason is that Notre Dame wouldn't have four quarterbacks going into next season, that Notre Dame needs an offensive tackle in the transfer portal. And neither of those things have happened. The four quarterbacks have stayed in school. I think that makes sense. Stayed in school in terms of stayed at Notre Dame. To me, it's surprising. I think the depth chart will probably remain the same moving forward. I don't necessarily expect big movements because I think how Notre Dame handled it has allowed Notre Dame to be in the position to keep those four on board going into next season. So unless Notre Dame has zero faith in a Steve Angeli or Kenny Minchie, I think they have to make sure that those guys get their share of reps behind Riley Leonard if Riley Leonard becomes a starter, as I predict. And I don't know that it's in the best it's in the program's best interest to sort of elevate CJ Carr maybe ahead of schedule, because I think there could be consequences to that in terms of future transfer forward movement. What do you think?
Yeah, I actually thought that there was a chance that all four of them would stay. At least I was advocating for that. If they had asked my opinion and I was their dad, I would have advised each of them to stay. It would have been a pretty easy conversation with Riley Leonard and CJ Carr, but the other two had reason to consider the portal. But I just felt like for everybody at the bottom of the depth chart, Minchie and Carr, and even to a certain extent Angeli, this is really about positioning themselves to be the starter in 2025. Angeli certainly could step in and be a starter this year. We still don't know if Riley Leonard is going to stay healthy, but I just thought there would be more options for them and they would be better positioned to make a run to be a starter somewhere else if they waited to the December portal period. And Notre Dame turns out to be in a really good place in terms of depth. And then the task needs to be continuing to get enough reps for all four of them, because Riley Leonard is going to need a lot this summer, and he's going to need a lot in August to keep developing those, make those guys feel like they're being fairly developed.
Yeah, I think in terms of the thought of waiting to put yourself in a better position if you want to go after the season, I think there is a little bit of a test case in Drew Pine being at Missouri. Like, Drew Pine's not going to be Missouri starting quarterback, right? I think he's going in there knowing he's the backup to Brady Cook. But then does that put him in position to be Missouri starting quarterback next year than if he would have been somewhere else that he could play this year? And is that a better position? I think, like, that's probably what you're saying. I think probably a fair argument for Steve Angeli, but I think you probably could argue the other way for Kenny Minchie. Like, hey, if you want to be the starter next year somewhere else, is it really important for you to be at Notre Dame this year? But he could also be the starter at Notre Dame next year. Like, there's no one that's
right
that transcendent that has that big of a resume that will be eligible next season at Notre Dame that maybe would discourage you from staying. So I think that there could be a way that you could work it, but it feels like such a long time to sort of buy into a program, and who knows how much changes will happen. Like, if Drew Pine is betting on being Missouri starter next year, who knows how much could change at Missouri between now and then.
They could recruit over him. They could portal over him.
He could also move out too. Like, he could also transfer out. Everyone's kid transfers at
right
these days. So,
right. Would be his fourth school then.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. And I mean, doesn't hurt Notre Dame, right? I mean, this is the best case scenario for Notre Dame that all four of those guys are staying. So interesting to see how it plays out in the summer and into the fall.
I think at some point I'm not saying that the numbers are going to go down, but I think people are going to be less, there's going to be cautionary tales, and there are also going to be good examples, but there's going to be cautionary tales of people saying, you know what, that didn't really work out, them leaving in the summer, like Tyler Buchner, for example. I think I'm going to stay. Again, Steve Angeli will still have 2 years somewhere else if he transfers in December, because he redshirted as a freshman. Mm-hmm. So, and right now, Kenny Minchie has 4 years. Now, he'll eat one of those up this year,
right,
but he would still have 3 years. So there's plenty of time to be a starter. But I think some players, it goes through their mind, do I want, and I'm sorry if I'm picking on this school, I'm just taking it out of the air, do I want to be the starting quarterback at Eastern Michigan, or do I want to be on a team that's going to be probably playing in the playoff this year? And I think I could put off being the starting quarterback at Eastern Michigan, play on a playoff team, experience that, and then maybe have better options in December. That's the way that I look at it. So,
well, I'll allow you to make fun of Eastern Michigan because its head coach, Chris Creighton, once coached at Wabash. So my arch rival Wabash is a DePaul University grad. So I'll allow the Eastern Michigan slander and take any shots you want at Ypsilanti.
Okay. So Notre Dame extended an offer last week to West Virginia cornerback Montre Miller. He played, I think, in only one game at West Virginia last year. He was a transfer in from Kent State. He had an injury issue. And this is while Rice cornerback Trayshon Devons, who already has visited Notre Dame, he continues to mull his options. I believe he visited Duke Lake last week. Does ND need to take one of those two or another quarterback? Do we feel like that's still a need that Notre Dame needs to address, that they need to get to 89 scholarships before they pare down to 85?
Yeah, I mean, it might put you in an uncomfortable spot in terms of the scholarship numbers, but I think it would be helpful. I don't know that it's do or die. It's not like, hey, we can't go into next season without it. But, I mean, just think of, like, if you want to make a playoff run, that's you're adding extra games to your schedule, so that's even more games that your cornerbacks have to stay healthy. And I think you want to be as deep as possible at important positions. Not that cornerback is your biggest need moving forward, but I think in terms of depth, you feel good about your top three, and then you have one nickelback with Jordan Clark. But after that, it's a little bit, not a little bit, I think it's a big question mark.
I think there's a cliff between, not to be mean, but between the top three and then Chance Tucker and the freshman right now.
Right, and I think if there wasn't that cliff, then maybe Micah Bell would still be here, right? Like if he was knocking on that door to play, he probably wouldn't have transferred out. And same thing for Clarence Lewis. He feels like he has better a shot to play at Syracuse than he did at Notre Dame. I think you could get in a situation with one or two injuries at that position where you're like, man, I don't know if we can win playoff games with that person playing cornerback. And I mean, you don't have to think that far back if you're a Notre Dame football fan with the Julian Love, Dante Vaughn situation against Clemson in 2018 and how greatly that impacted Notre Dame's defense to not have Julian Love on the field. So you got to have depth at a position like that. So I think that's why Notre Dame is at least exploring as many options as it can right there, right now.
I would agree with you. So we'll stay along the transfer portal or roster addition. I'm not even sure what to call
James
Rendell. Special teams coordinator / safeties coach / frequent flyer Marty Biagi secured a commitment from Australian punter James Rendell. What do we know about Rendell's punting prowess? And is it possible he's an upgrade over departed transfer Bryce McPherson?
Yeah, I think... in terms of what do we know, I can't say we know a ton, right? We know he's big kid, 6'6", 225. His father was a successful Australian rules football player. James himself played a bit as well.
That's Australian rules football signal. That was what was on ESPN all the time when it first started.
Oh, yeah? Australian rules football?
Yeah.
I don't know all the differences between the Australian rules football and rugby and all the different things like that. I remember rugby sevens was a thing that everyone was saying was going to be the next big thing. And I don't know that it took off like some folks thought it would be. But anyways, back to James Rendell. He's been working with Pro Kick Australia. And I think that's the biggest point. That's a group, an organization in Australia that works with guys to get them into colleges and put them in places where they can try their hand at American football or try their foot at American football. He told the newspaper out in Honolulu that he can punt it up to 80 yards and it has a hang time of 5.1 seconds. It was said as an average hang time. I don't know what that average is. It seems unlikely. I looked up, according to Pro Football Focus, the best average hang time in the NFL last year was 4.72 seconds by J.K. Scott. So 5.1 seems pretty crazy. So I don't know what they're measuring that at, if that's maybe just a different kind of punt or what's happening there. But there is
6'6", 225.
Yeah, maybe he is just otherworldly, but I don't know how he was heading to Hawaii before he was heading to Notre Dame. I think someone else may have caught on to him, but maybe everyone else has a punter that they're comfortable with.
And maybe his conversion is off with yards. Yeah. Yards.
The lineage with Australian punters is very strong. 8 of the last 11 seasons, the winner of the Ray Guy Award has gone to someone from Australia. The last two being Iowa's Torrey Taylor last season, and the year before that, Adam Korsak from Rutgers. Marty Biaggi had recruiting knowledge and history with Australia. He recruited Australian punters to both Purdue and Ole Miss, his most recent stops before coming to Notre Dame. I have some numbers here to maybe compare to Bryce McPherson. I'm not ready to say that James Rendell is going to be an improvement over Bryce McPherson, especially in his first year. Jack Ansell is the Purdue punter. He averaged 40.7 yards per punt last season. And I think that was in his third season as Purdue's starting punter. And then Fraser Mason at Ole Miss last year, in his first year, averaged 42.5 yards per punt last season. Now, who knows, like, maybe Marty Biaggi would make them a better punter than what they ended up as being, guys that he didn't spend a lot of time coaching. Bryce McPherson last year averaged 45.1 yards per punt last season. The big thing that Notre Dame struggled with was net punting, where they needed to improve. McPherson and Notre Dame's punt team averaged finished 83rd with a 38.03 net. And Purdue and Ole Miss weren't much better last year. Ole Miss was slightly better at 82nd overall. Purdue was actually worse, 102nd. So is that punter related? Is that punt team related? I don't know. I don't have enough. I haven't spent time breaking down the film of Purdue and Ole Miss punt team, but just grabbing some data to sort of compare maybe what James Rendell can do. I think it would be a bit of a leap to say that he's going to be better than Bryce McPherson next season, but we'll see what Marty Biaggi and him can do to maybe prove that wrong.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I noticed, and I noticed this when Bryce McPherson was a freshman, there are times I would stay in and watch the punters when John Sott was there and Bryce McPherson, and Bryce had a powerful leg, and those guys would try to punt it so that it would just shave the ceiling but not touch it. That was kind of a competition, but John Sott could put it wherever he wanted it. He could spin it at the two. Bryce McPherson was rolling into the end zone, and that really screws up your net punting. I mean, when you're subtracting 20 yards off a punt because it went in the end zone, that really messes up your net punting. And that was a skill that Bryce would have had to develop this offseason. And we don't know whether.
Yeah, we have no idea if James Rendell can Rendell do that.
Does, but we know it'll stay in the air a long time. So maybe somebody could go in and bat it back into play. We have some more topics to get to in this portal aftermath, but I know the question queue is filling up. Do we want to jump in there?
Yeah, let's do that. One thing I didn't get to in terms of Rendell is his eligibility. I don't have a clear-cut answer on that. I was told that he obviously guaranteed one season. Otherwise, they wouldn't have taken him if he wasn't guaranteed to play. The person I spoke to felt confident that he would probably get two and then possibly a third year. I don't really have any sort of idea how that works or what the math is behind that. That's like when we talk about, do we consider him a transfer? Or do we consider him a recruit? It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And I've never covered an Australian punter import before. So Alexander Ahrensberger coming from Germany had 4 years of eligibility, at least as I recall. So I'm not sure what the.
Yeah. The one thing we haven't been able to maybe pinned down, and I don't know that anybody has, is whether he's taken any college classes yet, because he's 23, right?
Yeah,
gonna be 24 right this week.
Yeah, my sense is he probably has, giving the eligibility questions there, but I don't know a ton yet. I haven't been able to track all that information down, but
he hasn't joined AARP yet. We do know that he's
still way younger than me, and I'm the young guy on this show, so
Right. Well, and the, I guess the good news is Notre Dame does have a backup plan with Eric Goins if all this goes sideways.
He's way younger than Eric Goins.
Yeah, he's way younger than Eric Goins. Eric is an AARP. Okay.
All right. Let's get to some of the questions we have here. First, a more of a compliment from Mike DeVoy. Tyler, you better get started loading an AI with all of Eric's incredible knowledge of all things Notre Dame before he retires. You know a lot of ND history, but Eric is in a class by himself.
Wow. Mike, thank you.
The truth is I'm not letting Eric retire. The breaking news to you guys here. He's just not allowed to do that. So, no, I'm kidding. But, yes, that would be a tremendous loss to both our site and me personally. But
I can. I have grandkids that beg for money.
Yeah, not to get real personal, but Eric's not necessarily considering retiring anytime in the near future. So, we're in this together and appreciate certainly all the knowledge he has because he does have way more than me. All right, to some questions. Bob Bolt says, do you think Deion Colsey could have a breakout final year similar to what we saw from Kevin Austin or Javon McKinley?
I think it's in him. I just don't know if the circumstances lend themselves. Those years kind of presented themselves. The circumstances did, where Notre Dame had a need for them to be that kind of player. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame doesn't need Deion Colsey to have that year, and I don't know if he's going to get the reps and the depth chart placement to get it. Because you look at the boundary receiver and you have Jaden Thomas, you have Bo Collins coming in from Clemson, and you have Micah Gilbert, who is one of the big surprises of, or at least big flashes of spring football as a freshman. And so Deion Colsey doesn't play another receiver position. But again, I think he's an elite athlete. And he's very mentally strong, and he made the decision to stay at Notre Dame. So I wouldn't write him off. I just think the circumstances are more difficult.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think there's not necessarily something within like Colsey's ability or talent, even though it hasn't necessarily come through so far in his Notre Dame career. But I do think the numbers game there would prevent him from being a go-to guy. Now, maybe someone's probably going to be that person. I don't know what it's going to be. We're going to talk about depth chart later. I think that boundary receiver position is one of the most difficult positions to sort of figure out what it's going to look like exactly with Jaden Thomas and Bo Collins there as well, and Micah Gilbert. So I think there's a lot of competition there. That would be quite the story for Deion Colsey, which it was quite the story for Kevin Austin and Javon McKinley when they were able to play back
and,
to
and
their
they
potential
were similarly ranked.
Right. You know,
they were these 4-star guys that were pretty highly regarded coming out of high school.
So we'll see what happens there. All right. Chris W says, given that we had a first and second rounder on the O-line, how would you grade the overall O-line play in 2023?
Am I doing the Marie Biafore grade system where I have to give it a letter grade?
I think so. Unless you want to do decimal points like PFF.
I will say a B minus because in some of the bigger games, and I think some of it was schematic flaws that led to it more than players' ability and so forth. But the Duke game, Clemson, Louisville, were troubling, but they were a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award, so it's better than a C. So I would say BB minus would be my grade, and that is disappointing for a team with that kind of talent at the tackle position. But that wasn't where the most of the problems happened. They happened in the interior.
Yeah, I think that's probably around the right range. I think at some point I did a grade on the coaching staff assigning. I did grades for the coach staff, at least during the middle of the season. I don't remember if I did that at the end of the year. I'm sure you did.
Cause Marie would have asked for that.
So I probably have it somewhere. I try to be consistent, but we do so much. It's hard to keep track of what all that stuff is. And I don't have it at my fingertips. But yeah, I would imagine probably somewhere in that B minus range. like Blake Fisher is a second rounder, but it's, I don't think it's because he played like a second rounder last year. That's my opinion. I think there's the there's potential there for him to be better. That's why I think he would have been great at Notre Dame next year if he decided to return, but he wanted to jump into the NFL. And that's where he'll have a chance to sort of sort out some of his consistency issues that I think prevented him from reaching the heights that his physical abilities should lend him to. So the Louisville game is just like, what's going on there? That I don't know that I'll ever get a good explanation of why it worked in that way and why Notre Dame tinkered in that way. Zeke Correll, I think, sort of was a little bit physically maxed out at Notre Dame. And I think that's part of the reason why Notre Dame was excited about the possibilities with Ashton Craig going into this season. The guards, should Billy Shrouth have been put in earlier? I don't know. I think you could make that argument. But I think he certainly did a good job in replacing Rocco Spindler after Rocco went down with an injury. So BB minus is probably somewhere in the right spot for how Notre Dame's offensive line played last season. All right, Beefeater ND08 asks, where do you think Bo Collins is going to fit in? My son just got a sweet dual autographed Bo Collins Riley Leonard football card.
That is pretty cool. Tyler James will sign his football card for you as well.
Yeah, you have to create it and then mail it to me, and then I'll sign it.
Well, this is kind of stealing for something I had for later in the show. Bo Collins is fascinating to me. I think of all the people that are coming in June, he's the guy I'm really eager to see where he fits. I just can't think that he's going to be irrelevant having better stats than anybody on Notre Dame's team with a weaker passing attack at Clemson. You know, he's got that recruiting pedigree, which sometimes Rivals misses and the other recruiting service misses, but there's always that chance that they turn into that player at some point. And I just don't think he would have transferred to Notre Dame if he didn't think he had a chance here to improve his draft equity and so forth. So I wouldn't be surprised if he is kind of a good surprise on Notre Dame's roster next year, but I'm still scratching my head a little bit, not having been able to see him play this year.
Yeah, it is one of the bigger question marks going into the summer and fall is like, what does Bo Collins bring Notre Dame? I think he was definitely worth adding to the roster and trying to figure that out. Because it's not like Notre Dame's got a bunch of sure things at wide receiver right now anyways. They're a position that's looking to ascend, not a position that's already ascended. And I think Bo Collins sort of fits in that mix there as well. What limited Bo Collins at Clemson? Was it a sometimes bad passing attack? Clemson's offense as a whole struggled. It wasn't like Bo Collins was the only one that maybe – wasn't the best player or didn't maybe meet his potential during their Clemson career over the last few seasons on offense. So what does that look like for Notre Dame? We don't know that yet. We'll get our first look at him in August when Notre Dame starts camp and see how quickly he can catch on there. The fact that he's been around campus, even though he wasn't participating in spring ball, as he finishes up at Clemson from afar, he was able to be around. And I think that allows him to do some things with Notre Dame's quarterbacks to learn the offense as well. So I think from everything that we know, he's doing everything he can to get himself in a position to be able to help right away at Notre Dame. And that's what he wants to do. And that's what Notre Dame would like him to do. And we'll see where he sort of fits in the mix, because I don't think it's any sort of guarantee of who gets what amount of snaps at that boundary receiver position. And I think Bo is probably pretty firmly in that boundary position. I don't know that he's necessarily a great fit for the field or slot positions. All right. Carberry Q asked, does Angeli graduate this year or next? I feel he at least wants to get his degree.
I think we talked about how far away he was. So next year he'll be a junior academically. So he won't, I doubt that he would be able to finish up even by May, maybe in the summertime. But I think he was able to get ahead of the curve. If I remember right, he is not in step with other people in his class. He has more credit hours than the average person in his class. But I don't think he would be able to graduate, for example, in December, which is when he would have to decide when to make a move. But he would be close enough to do a Drew Pine or Tyler Buchner probably.
Yeah. I don't know where he's at exactly. I didn't ask him that when I spoke to him this spring. So I think we're just sort of guessing there. It's not unreasonable for a guy to get through the spring of his junior year and graduate, especially as an early enrollee with all the summer courses that Notre Dame's players have as well. So I wouldn't.
Yeah, Buchner only had to come back for one semester.
Right.
In a similar situation.
And Tyler Buchner is, from what we know, a very good student as well. So that plays a role in it as well. What the players have signed up for, it can handle in terms of increased workloads and stuff like that to try to get the degree in a certain amount of time. Another one from Beefeater. Anything to drown out another feckless Taylor Swift story for my daughters? Buchner got some playing time in the ACC championship. Still looks rusty. Any word on his lacrosse future?
I'm hoping to talk to him at some point this spring. That team is loaded, and it's going to be loaded next year because they haven't run out of Kavanaughs. They lose Pat, I believe, after this year, but they still have Chris. And they're getting grad transfers. They're getting the best recruits in the country. And Jordan Faison has 3 more years of eligibility. Buchner did get in the first half of that game on Saturday, which surprised me a little bit that he was in that early. They emptied the bench late in the game and got everybody in. But he seems to be doing okay. I mean, he's not a big contributor, but he's good enough to get on the field with a team that is dominating. I mean, right. They just beat the team that's the number 2 overall seed in the NCAA tournament. They beat them 16-6 on Sunday on a neutral field. So I think he's got a future in lacrosse, but if he wants to play a lot, I don't know that he would play at Notre Dame, and he would still have a football future if he wants to pursue that. And in 2 weeks, he'll have his Notre Dame degree, and he can go off and do whatever it is he wants to do in the business world too. So he's got lots of options.
Yeah, that neutral field is also the home state of the team they're playing against. So it's a little bit less than neutral, I would imagine. But yeah, in terms of Tyler, from what I remember and know, like, there was no set plan after coming back to Notre Dame to give lacrosse a try. Like, the option was still open for him to go back into football, see if he goes into lacrosse. Maybe he stops playing sports entirely, but I think he would have up to 3 years of eligibility left if he got a waiver for a medical redshirt. So I think that there's plenty of certainly bandwidth in terms of time left for him to try to make something of himself as a football player, as a Notre Dame graduate. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if it'll be as a football player or as a lacrosse player, but commend him for finishing up his degree and taking sort of a creative path to figure out what's next for him.
I think he might only have 2. I think he's in the first class that doesn't have the COVID year.
Okay.
But who knows? Drew Pine, I think, thinks he has 4 years left and he can play 11 years.
Yeah, that was just what I heard from someone else. That wasn't my own math, but sometimes everyone likes to maybe over-exaggerate their eligibility as well. All right, another question from MGo Irish. As we look forward to the A&M opener, any insights as to how Mike Elko is molding his new squad? Can they be developed enough to hang in with the Irish in game one?
Well, Tyler and I are both fortunate enough to have one of our good friends covers Texas A&M. And as that friend was talking to me at about 2 in the morning recently, while taking a walk in Dallas and allegedly stepping on a rabbit. It gets hard to pull in the details of Texas A&M when those are the kind of details that are coming on the other end of the phone. Oh, I just stepped on a rabbit. And we will get many more details when we go to his wedding, and there are like 90% Texas A&M fans in there. But what Carter told me is they're
Carter Carls. I don't know that you ever said his full name.
Carter Carls, yes. Carter, just first name Carter, the guy that gets chased by wasps that likes Papa John's pizza. I couldn't believe there wasn't a Papa John's gift card in his registry. But anyways, what Carter Carls, who works for the Texas A&M site for 247 Sports, said was their quarterback situation is somewhat similar. There's a lot of talent and depth there. Not sure about the health of the starter, Wegman. The one thing they are going to be very good at, Carter felt, was defensive line play, that their defensive line would really challenge Notre Dame's offensive line in that opener. And that they have built very well with the transfer portal. They relied on it. Mike Elko has relied on it. He thinks it's going to be a 9-6 game that Notre Dame probably will win, that he doesn't think either offense will score that much. I do not think it's going to be that low scoring. I think Notre Dame's offense will probably surprise Carter a little bit, but he does not have high hopes for Texas A&M's offense, but he is very bullish on their defense.
Yeah, it seems like pass rush would probably be a strength for Texas A&M. They have a lot of top-end recruits and transfer portal guys that are supposed to be good at getting after the passer. So I think that's the biggest concern for Notre Dame going into that game with an inexperienced offensive line on the edges. So I think Notre Dame is going to have to make sure that it's in a position to handle what Texas A&M is doing from a pass rush standpoint. I would be a little bit surprised. Like, even if we think Notre Dame's in line for a big season, like, would you be surprised if Notre Dame went in and blew out Texas A&M?
I would be surprised, especially given some of the operational things with road games last year. Now, I think having Mike Denbrock on the staff is going to help that in a couple ways. One, he's been to Texas A&M. Two, he's really good at game operations and game prep, but I would say he's probably only been to Texas A&M once, I'm guessing, because LSU played them every year. They would have played him at home once and on the road once during his 2 years there.
Yeah, so my expectation would be that they would at least hang with Notre Dame. So maybe Notre Dame is farther ahead than Texas A&M. And it's like, I think we both probably expect Notre Dame to have a better season than Texas A&M, but Texas A&M has a more difficult schedule. It's just a tough place for Notre Dame to play in a season opener. So even if Texas A&M isn't going in with national championship expectations, there's going to be a pretty loud environment that Notre Dame's going into for its first game down there in Texas to start the season. All right. I think that's all the questions, Eric.
Okay. So we will resume where we were, and we kind of referred to this. What are the hardest positions to map out a depth chart for? You and I both took a stab at the depth chart after the spring game. You made the first initial kind of jump at it, and then I went back and made the changes where I thought you were way off. There weren't a lot. There was just some tweaking and so forth. But again, there were certain positions that were really tough where I felt like I was guessing. So what would you feel like were the hardest positions to do that for?
Well, to make fun of ourselves, clearly we had trouble with the kick return position. We didn't have Jaden Harrison at the top, which is where he should have been. I think we moved him to the bottom when he got injured and forgot to move him back to the top. But besides that, and even I think,
and we had Dylan Devison as the holder.
Why are we ruling that out? I don't know that I would rule that out. Who do we? Not like anyone has game experience. I mean, he's the only one with game
experience. Well, Chris Salerno did it in the blue gold game.
Sure, but Dylan Devison did it in real games prior to being replaced by Bryce McPherson. So I think it's probably okay. As open of a job as there is on the team in terms of being the holder, because I don't know that we know that James Rendell is going to be guaranteed to be the holder either. So I don't know what that's going to be. I'm just giving you a hard time. But I think the spots that are the most difficult for me are linebacker because of all the mixing and matching. Boundary receiver, which we've spent time talking about, Jaden Thomas, Bo Collins, Deion Colsey, Micah Gilbert, lots of options there. I think even slot receiver is sort of hard. Like, how is that going to play out with great Jaden Greathouse, Jordan Faison, and Jaden Harrison? Defensive tackle after Jason Onye. You know who your top two are with Mills and Onye, but who's third between Brennan Vernon, Cole Mullins, Tyson Ford? I think that's a pretty open spot there. And then nickelback behind Jordan Clark. Right now it's Jaden Osbury, but is that really what Notre Dame's going to go into the season with as Jaden Osbury as the number two nickel option? We'll see if that holds true. So those are that's the list I came up with there. Eric, were there any ones that you disagree with there or ones that I didn't include?
I don't disagree. I think linebacker, I've got a pretty good idea of who's going to play. It's just it's not a linear depth chart because they're moving people around. So I can see what you're saying there. I thought boundary receiver was the hardest. I'm like, what do I do with Deion Colsey? Is he really number four here? I put Bo Collins at four just because he was the newcomer. But I don't think that's the way it's going to end up. But I couldn't tell you who four is going to be. I'm not even confident who two is going to be. And maybe I'm
right.
Jaden Thomas, maybe he doesn't end up number one. There was a point early in their careers where Colsey was fast-tracked and Jaden Thomas was the one that was redshirted. I put left guard because I don't know who's going to win between Coogan and Rocco. My suspicion is that Rocco will take that because if he didn't think he was, I think he would have hit the portal. And then Viper in a certain way, because I think Jordan Botello had a really good spring. I thought Junior Tui Halamaka looks really good when he's in there, and he's really solid. And then I think Boubacar Traore is the wild card there, and maybe it's because he's situational. I think he's the best of those three as pass rusher. It's just, can he be in every down defensive end, and maybe they don't need him to at this point of his career. For me, that one was difficult because I don't think he's three.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think I was leaning towards like the more option positions, but they're obviously like left guard. We don't know who the starter is, so that certainly is a valid one.
Well, I think we took the exercise different, and I think that's fine. We interpret it differently. So, okay, we're not in charge here. Did ND miss an opportunity to add an offensive tackle, or they're just not enough attractive options this spring? I mean, they still could, but what do you think?
Yeah, in terms of people that ended up in the portal, it doesn't seem like there was one that fit. I guess if you wanted to criticize, you would just say that Notre Dame didn't do a good enough job of tampering to get one in that it wanted. I think there are plenty of schools across the country that probably were in the same boat of wanting to try to take a tackle in the transfer portal, but there just weren't enough good options. I had reported on the Insider Lounge a few months ago that I had heard the name of Wisconsin's left tackle Jack Nelson as someone that Notre Dame would be interested in it potentially if he entered the transfer portal. That never happened. Those are the kind of things that you would need to happen if Notre Dame was going to get a tackle, because obviously Notre Dame has a starting point that they need to improve upon if they're going to take someone. So transfer portal's a murky game for certain. And there's all kinds of schools doing whatever they can and getting messages across to whoever they can to try and get people in the portal. Even if you watch the NFL draft coverage closely, Nick Saban talked about Quinyon Mitchell, the Toledo cornerback. He's like, he's the best guy that we wanted to get out of the portal, but we couldn't get him in the portal or something like that. Wow. So there's all kinds of evaluations that happen within programs that there's scouting done. Like, okay, if this guy goes in, this is the kind of guy that we would go after. It's up, and who knows how those people decide if they're going to go in or not. That's the maybe undercovered aspect of how this all works out.
Right. And it's not just in football. When I was talking to Dan Olson of the Collegiate Girls Report, basketball report, he's a recruiting analyst for women's basketball. He said there was all kinds of tampering with Hannah Hidalgo. I mean, that he had anecdotal evidence of it, and that she was having none of it. Her and her family were having none of it. But that's what's happening in a lot of sports, that people are trying to lure the stars off of other teams. So anyways, okay. So Notre Dame added a preferred walk-on grad transfer in defensive lineman Quentin Autry from Columbia. What impact might Quentin Autry have?
The scout team.
I think that's
about it. I think the scout team is where Notre Dame wants to continue to improve. I think that's an important part of its roster. If you can add walk-on guys that have played college football elsewhere, it will do that. Jake Tefelski is another one that Notre Dame added out of Central Michigan, a running back. I think he has a better chance of impacting Notre Dame games, because I think he will probably work himself into special teams better than someone like Quentin Autry can be. As a defensive lineman, that's not a position that's used a ton on special teams outside of field goal block. Maybe he can find a role in punt or punt return. So I think it's a mostly a scout team ad, and someone that can be added to the list of guys that can work against Notre Dame's offensive line to get them prepared for games on Saturdays.
Okay, so Notre Dame heads into exam week this week. Then the players have a short break. The veterans report back on June 2nd. Newly enrolled freshmen report on June 9th. And then regular classes start, I believe, on the 10th. So among the new faces, grad transfers, Rendell, the freshman, Gabe Rubio returning. Who are you most intrigued by? What's ahead for them this summer?
I think the ones that I'm most intrigued by are the ones that can impact the team. So I think Rendell certainly has the potential starting punter. Bo Collins, what kind of impact can he make? Rod Hurd, the safety transfer from Northwestern. He's someone that we believe has a chance to be a starting safety. I expect those three to make an impact. Gabriel Rubio, the more that Notre Dame showed the interior depth on the defensive line this spring, I was less concerned about his absence. Will it be noticed would it be noticed if he wasn't back? So I'm curious to see what sort of impact he can make. It's obviously we've seen him play. I just think that Notre Dame does have good depth there. And so I don't think it's necessarily going to be like, hey, Gabe, welcome back. Here's your spot. I think he's going to have to fight to get back in the mix there, but certainly has the potential to be a regular contributor to Notre Dame's defense. The freshmen, I think, are just guys that are probably depth pieces, but maybe they surprised Gerby Lambert at offensive tackle, because obviously the tackle position is a concern going into the season. And then cornerback is the other position that we talk about where they have some depth concerns. Can either Leonard Moore or Carson Hobbs become the fourth cornerback or a backup nickelback? Those are the guys that are the most intriguing to me. I didn't leave many off the list for you there, so I imagine we probably have a lot of overlap.
Yeah, I didn't put Rendell on my list. I probably should have, but I will get bored with punts. Once I see him punt at 80 yards and 5.1 hang time, I'll get bored with it. But Collins and Hurd, definitely. The cornerbacks, just in case Leonard Moore, Carson Hobbs, one of them is more camera ready than we think. And then I went with a wild card, a guy who I don't think has a chance to make the two deeps, but his stats really intrigued me. And saying his name correctly tonight is going to make me proud, and that's Bodie Cahoon from Roanoke, Virginia, just because his stats were off the charts. And when Tom Lemming, a longtime recruiting analyst, had a chance to see him in person, he said, you know what? This kid is really good. And so he's got a lacrosse background too, so that's kind of interesting, but just with all these young linebackers, I again, they don't have to get him ready, but it'd be curious to me if he can force his way into being a surprise. I don't know. That's kind of the one I rolled the dice with a little bit. So, okay. So I did a top 10 list of summer transformations of the past decade. I don't know if you came up with a list of even a top five, but if you didn't, then we could go on to maybe who might be this year.
I did come up with a list as you asked me to do. I found the time to do that. And I tried to include a couple that you didn't include in your top 10. So maybe some of these are a little bit of a reach in terms of putting them in the top five, but I didn't want to necessarily steal all five of mine from your top 10. Okay. Honestly, I could probably make a list of only linebackers when I was going through like trying to think of guys that I didn't include were Tavon Coney and Asmar Bilal. Those guys had vast improvements from year to year. The two that weren't on your list, number five, Julian Love, someone that joined the team as a freshman in the summer. So obviously he had a great summer to get himself ready to become a starter as a freshman. He ended up leading all freshmen in games started with 8 and tackles 32 in that 2016 season. Number four is Drew White. His sophomore year in 2018, he played in 4 games. He had shoulder surgery in the spring of 2019 to repair an AC joint from a skiing accident. So he sort of came out of nowhere in 2019 to start 12 games and tie for the team high with 80 tackles. And the person he tied with was my number three guy, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. He in 2018 played in only 2 games, and then in 2019 started all 13 games and had 80 tackles as well. Two, I went with Kyren Williams. I switched my 2 and 1 from your list. I had Kyren Williams there. He didn't get a spring practice in 2020 because of COVID, and then ended up with 1,125 rushing yards. And then number one, I went with DeShone Kizer because it was just so surprising how different he was in the spring of 2015 to the fall of 2015 to being inserted in the starting lineup after Malik Zaire's injury. So I had Kizer atop my list.
Yeah, I think I gave Kyren bonus points for having to work around COVID. And it wasn't like it was a clean shot for Kyren to get to the top of the depth chart. I mean, he had to leap over people.
Right.
But yeah, those two. Yeah, Drew White was a real interesting one because he came in a game against Navy, I want to say, out in San Diego, where I think Drew Tranquil got hurt.
Right.
And I remember Brian Kelly going, oh, wow, maybe there's something here. And that kind of planted the seed. So those are good ones. So should I say my top five or?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Give your top five. I think three of them are included in mine, but I didn't have the same order.
So five for me was Ian Book overtaking Brandon Wimbush. I mean, he had a really good bowl game. And in the spring, things kind of died down. And Brian Kelly was like, hey, Brandon Wimbush is the guy. And then over the summer, something changed. And Book started to get that niche role to start the season. And then in game four, he became the starter in 2018. And Brandon Wimbush was, I mean, Notre Dame was 3-0 and ranked 8 in the country when they made that change.
Yep.
I had Drew Tranquil, number 4, the Rover, summer of 2017. He had been a safety with Brian Van Gorder and really had kind of gotten exposed. And then, you know, Mike Elko comes in, he's got this new position, a Rover, and it was a great fit. And it led to Drew then being an inside linebacker the next year. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, you already went over. DeShone Kizer, 2. And number one was Kyren Williams. I went 10 deep, but you'll have to read the story to get the rest of them.
That's right. And you know that Julian Love and Drew White didn't make the list.
They did not. I didn't include freshmen in my list, like junior enrolling freshmen. Otherwise, I would have had Michael Mayer in there and Ben Morrison and some of those guys. I try to make it guys that had been on the team, but I don't know that I instructed you to do that specifically. So I'm good with you doing Julian Love. I remember the first day of fall camp going, who the heck is 27? Because he was really impressing me. And then I looked on my roster with the 3-point type, and so with a telescope so that I could read it. So, okay. So among this year's roster, who do you think could be, I came up with a few of them, could be the candidate to be this year's summer transformer?
Let me let you go first so I don't take all the answers that I've been taking. So let me have you give your list first.
I also went with where there's opportunity. So I still think at that field receiver, as much as I think Chris Mitchell's going to win that, I think KK Smith is somebody that I don't want to let go of in terms of maybe being a surprise. Emil Wagner, I've been honking at him and saying that he's going to win the right tackle spot. And if his body continues to transform, I think he will. Luke Talich, just because I don't know who he's going to replace, because Rod Hurd's there and Adon Shuler was lights out this spring. But Luke Talich, I think the biggest thing for him is just learning coverages and getting better at that. And he was really good in the, both the spring game and the scrimmage the week before. And then the other one is kind of a position group. It's that group of Josh Burnham and Bryce Young at the field end, Boubacar Traore at the Viper.
Yeah.
I think all three of those guys could just really surprise us. And although the guys at the top of the jar, I mean, RJ Oben in the spring game impressed me. So
right.
They would have to be really, really good to bump somebody.
Yeah, I would probably, I think my focus is usually a lot on those positions that we talk about that there's need at, right? If Notre Dame's looking at potential transfer portal additions there, I think there's opportunity also for someone to say, you know what, it's okay if you didn't get someone in the portal there because I'm going to make that leap. So I think Emil Wagner is a good answer. Certainly, I think any of the tackles would be, it'd be great for Notre Dame if it happened, right? If Tosh Baker makes a big leap, yes, he's later in his career, but if Tosh Baker looks different in the fall than he did this spring, that would be a good thing for Notre Dame. I think my leaning candidate would probably be Charles Jagusa, because I think there's maybe the most untapped potential there just because he's such a young player.
Yeah.
And I think there could be as if he does make leaps and lives up to some of the talk around him, I think he can make a huge leap between what he was in the blue-gold game and what he will be in the fall. So I think that would be an interesting one there. Those nickelback – potential backup nickelbacks or fourth cornerback options, whether it's Chance Tucker, Carson Hobbs, Leonard Moore, can those guys have big season or big summers to put themselves in a position to contribute? Like they wouldn't be guys to ask to make an impact coming out of the gate. But if something happens, I mean, some of those guys we mentioned, like Ian Book, he wasn't asked to be the starter at the beginning of the year. Some of those guys make their leaps, maybe not at the beginning of the season, but a few games into the season when asked to make that jump, they had successful summers that put them in position there. So those would be some of the guys that I would probably circle in terms of maybe having transformational summers to put them in good positions for the fall.
Okay, good list. We have some recruiting segment to get to real quick, but do we need to hit the questions? I see a lot of LOLs in the comments, so hopefully they're laughing at each other and not at my shirt.
Yes, I think they are laughing at each other. I think there was some discussions of the hydration levels of Notre Dame's players, but for the Texas A&M game that was drawing some laughs. MGo Irish says, any guess yet as to which two home games this season will be night games at South Bend? I'm assuming Florida State has to be one of them, assuming the Big Ten doesn't get in their way on NBC.
Yeah, I think it's hard to pick, and I'm not sure that they're committed to two. I know for sure the Shamrock Series game is a primetime game because the new athletic director told me that, Pete Bavacqua. I would think Florida State. Notre Dame likes to have one of those in October, kind of recruiting purposes, but I don't know that the October game's fit. I almost would go with Louisville at the end of September. What do you think?
Yeah, usually the ticket prices sort of give it away, and I know the season tickets have, like, renewals have already gone out, And I know I have that somewhere, but I don't have it in front of me. I was trying to see if I could pull it up quickly, which I haven't done a good job of doing, but I think it somewhere, like if you know what the prices are, the highest prices usually end up being the night games. And so I don't know what those are off the top of my head. Maybe someone in the chat does, but I would probably lean towards that Florida State game, even though November is hard to do night games because of the weather. But I do think that Florida State game would be one. And then I would also lean towards
the weather. And they wouldn't mind it being colder for those poor kids from Tallahassee.
Exactly.
The last time that it was really cold when Florida State was up here in the Brandon Wimbush game. Maybe that wasn't the last time, but the Brandon Wimbush game where the Notre Dame players came out with their shirts off.
Yep.
Just kind of psych them out.
All right, MGo Irish says, another one, knowing the new Aussie punter is TBD, how are we feeling about the field goal kicker this season?
You know, a lot of times these guys don't look great in the spring, and Mitch Jeter didn't look lights out, but his range looked really good. His accuracy at times wasn't great in some of the periods that we saw him. But given the fact that he'll have all summer and they'll be outside this summer, they were indoors a lot this spring, I think he'll get it together. I mean, he only missed two field goals last year, so I feel pretty good about Mitch Jeter.
Yeah, I feel pretty good too. Yeah, he's had a career of having success, and I think there's not really a lot of reason to doubt that would continue, unless maybe the holding situation is shaky, or the long snapping situation too, where we're looking at new long snappers for Notre Dame after a successful career.
How can you doubt Reno Monteforte?
Yep. It's easy to have faith in him once you talk to him. Todd Krall adds, Louisville is on Peacock. Would they really do a night game for Peacock?
Oh, what do you think? Louisville is on Peacock.
That's what it says on the schedule. I pulled it up to make sure that was correct. And they have games listed as NBC/Peacock, but Louisville is listed as just Peacock. I wouldn't put it past them. NBC wants people to subscribe to Peacock, so they got to put good game. I mean, if they're already putting it on Peacock, why not put it at night? Like, I don't know that would necessarily change their thought in terms of trying to get – if they're already going to put the game on Peacock.
I think this is about the time of year they do announce kickoff times, but I'm going to try to do some digging this week to see if I can find it out so we can talk to it on the next show and tell your dog that's in the picture.
Yeah, and
unless
I think
that's you, Todd.
I think there's been talk of single game tickets going on in May, and that's way earlier than normal for my recollection. I thought they would usually wait till June or July for that. I'm interested to see.
Todd said they said it on Peacock during the spring game too.
Okay. So. There you go. Thanks, Todd. I didn't catch that part of the spring game broadcast. Mike DeVoy asks, how does Deuce Knight compare to Brandon Wimbush?
He's taller. I think they're both breathtaking athletes. I mean, Brandon Wimbush could have played college baseball and maybe at a higher level. He was really that good. Deuce Knight, we should have mentioned this in the recruiting section, but we're running out of time. He just won the state high jump championship in Mississippi 6A, class 6A, which is the second highest class. He won it at 6'8". He won the long jump for the second year in a row, and I think he was at 23.25. I mean, he's a breathtaking athlete. I don't know who would win a 40-yard dash between those two. I think it'd be pretty close. But I think in a combine that Deuce Knight would do better. But they both kind of have the same challenge of becoming a consistent passer. And that's the stage that Deuce Knight is at right now that Brandon Wimbush did not get through during his time at Notre Dame. The reason he didn't finish as a starting quarterback at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I will add that issue with Brandon wasn't necessarily, at least to me, clear in terms of accuracy in high school. He was a 71.6% career passer. His senior year, he completed 76% of his passes. So
now his star receiver was Minka Fitzpatrick, who was a star defensive back at Alabama, but
correct. So that certainly was a help. Deuce Knight, I think, has more to prove in terms of being a productive high school player. But yeah, I think the skill sets are sort of similar. The the arm strength that both have. They can really connect on deep balls. And that was even a strength of Brandon's, even when he was at Notre Dame. So, yeah, I think there are some similarities there. I think Deuce is a little bit of a different athlete than Brandon in terms of maybe the non-speed stuff, some of the other stuff that you're talking about in terms of his track accomplishments. It'll be interesting to see what Deuce gets built into, because he's a pretty intriguing prospect right now.
Okay, we are in overtime. So do you want to give us the cliff notes of what's going on with recruiting?
Yeah, well, I needed to give the answer to your question that you gave me, because I spent a lot of time trying to figure out the math for Notre Dame's finish.
Okay, what kind of finish does Notre Dame need to have a top five class? And is that realistic?
Yeah, so I here's what I did. I looked at the last four recruiting cycles, what the number five team finished with. And that was in terms of the points with the rivals rankings formula, the average of those was 2,696. Notre Dame currently has 2,285 points. And that includes Notre Dame's 5 3-star recruits, because Notre Dame is at 20 and you take the top 20 commits in the class. So Notre Dame would need 5 commits that total 801 points for an average of 160. I know that doesn't mean much to people, but if you look at the formula, 160 is basically someone who's ranked number 61 through 65 overall in the class. So you would need an average of 5 top 65 players to get Notre Dame to that spot. That seems fairly unrealistic. I think the best path for Notre Dame to get there would be some guys that are already in the class get recruiting rankings bumps, get a couple 5-stars in the class. I think that's what Notre Dame is going to need in terms of trying to get there. I did a class prediction and it included 5 guys joining the class. And that if you did the math with those 5 guys, which are all 4-star recruits, 3 of which are rivals 250 recruits, that would only get you to 2,555 points, which would finish 9, which is where Notre Dame finished last year if you looked at the points from last season. So it's not an easy task. I know that's the sort of the goal and what Notre Dame would like to get to, but it's hard to get to that top 5 with just the level that some of the top teams recruit at.
Well, Notre Dame certainly makes their base high school recruiting, but is a top 5 class as important when you combine portal acquisitions? Because obviously Riley Leonard would be a 5-star portal acquisition. Some of these others were pretty good as well.
I think it's too soon to say that it's not important. Now Michigan's not a top 5 recruiting team, but they were top 11 in each of the 4 that impacted Notre Dame or Michigan seasons last year. In 2019, Michigan was 10th. In 2020, it was 11th. 2021, 10th. 2022, 9th. So maybe top five doesn't necessarily need to be required, but I think you got to be in that range. Michigan had the advantage of having a lot of experience on their team and certainly helped itself the transfer portal at times. But if you look at the top 5 classes in that same window, if you look at the teams that were there, you're talking about playoff teams: Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Texas, Oklahoma. Those are the type of teams that have been in the playoffs in recent years. Ohio State, Texas A&M is 2022. They were the number 1 team. They have not necessarily been regular top 5 teams. So Oregon was in there in 2021. So it does certainly help your chances. I think it's too soon to say that it's not as important because of the transfer portal. I think a lot of the transfer portal additions are usually finishing off the base that you have in terms of what you've done in the recruiting pool.
Any other recruiting tidbits that we need to hit?
Not necessarily. Moving into May, obviously we're in the May part of the calendar. Coaches are out on the recruiting trail. We're continuing to cover where the coaching staff is making visits in our trail tracks. We'll see if anyone else wants to make commitment announcements this month. Official visits will be coming in June for Notre Dame. That's the big headline of the recruiting time right now.
Okay. Well, I think we've answered them all, unless there's one last secret question we need to get to.
Todd Krall squeezed one in when we were talking. Which member of the coaching staff will end up being a head coach somewhere in college?
I would say Mike Mickens.
Yeah, and I think that's a good pick.
Yeah, that would be my number one choice. I think Denbrock could. I think at this point, maybe he's thinking, I'm going to finish out my career as an offensive coordinator that makes a lot of money and does really good.
Yeah, I feel like being an offensive coach helps. It seems like that's not, now there's obviously plenty of defensive head coaches too, but that's just where the game's moving. So Gino Gaudioli being a head coach at some point, like, yeah. I don't think that would be a huge surprise as a quarterback's coach.
And I know Dylan has that
goal. He wants to do that. Yeah, he wants to do that. Max Bulla, I mean, he's a young coach, former NFL player. I think that would be someone that could be a head coach down the road. I think there's a lot of guys.
I think he would yell at donors to donate.
I think there's a lot of guys that are on the coaching staff that could have eventually end up being head coaches. The guys that
Marty Biaggi could be one in Australia.
Yeah. And I mean, the two coordinators that Notre Dame has now, I think, I don't know that they necessarily want to be, right? I don't know that that's something that Mike Denbrock's chasing anymore. I don't know that Al Golden's chasing that. I think if the right opportunity happened for Al Golden, I wouldn't rule that out. But there's a lot of the assistant coaches on the staff that could end up being head coaches at some point in their career because they have so much of their career ahead of them still. All right, well, that is it for us tonight here on Football Never Sleeps. Thanks for everyone joining us tonight and watching on replay. Make sure you've subscribed to our channel here on YouTube. Hit the bell for reminders when we have content. Hit the like button to support the show. If you're not a subscriber to our website, don't forget about our 30-day free trial. That's available to InsideIndySports.com. Promo code NDYT gets you access to our premium analysis and recruiting coverage and special access over to us on the Insider Lounge. You don't have to wait for the next live show or podcast to hear from us. There's a link to sign up in the video description. I like that, beef eater. Thanks, mates.
That's what made me chuckle.
We'll have a podcast on Thursday this week, and we'll be back here next week for Football Never Sleeps again. So thanks again for everyone tuning in, and enjoy the week. Thanks to Legacy Heating and Air for continuing to support Football Never Sleeps.